あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えない。
What's good, Internet? It is Monday, August 6th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 176. That kind of works
Bicentennial podcast-ish.
No, that's not remotely.
That's not it.
That's not...
It's 76! Spirit of 76! No, it's
a... So, the...
Okay.
200 is why that was 76 that year.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
It's bicentennial.
Right.
Yeah.
Rob is looking up into the distance. Rob is here.
Rob's
in the
a
studio.
Historian.
Oh my God, I'm where the magic happens.
Where the magic happens. Where the audio fights is. Oh. You might notice that this audio sounds different, and that's because of the ghosts.
Our mics are broken.
We have ghosts here. They live here now.
They live here. They probably always lived here. This used to be a DIY venue, this building. And my understanding is Vice. Was like
sorted that right.
Well, there is my understand. I wasn't here. My understanding is there is some lingering distaste about turning a DIY venue into an office, even for a company that's Vice, which is like historically has a very DIY
youth culture.
Yeah. So maybe there are some ghosts of audio engineers past who are haunting our equipment. I'm like, no, man. Like you, this should be a fucking punk show. We got to add some line noise.
Little do we do they know, we are the punks.
We love Vice at this point.
Please,
Vice punks.
The ghost we is honor
like,
you.
You guys need a wall of sound. Let me just crank on this compressor here.
Oh, God. Obviously, those are the voices of Natalie Watson.
Hi.
Rob Zachney.
What's up?
And Danielle Riendo.
How you doing?
We are all here in the studio today. We are all looking at each other face to face.
New York Rob is here.
New York Rob.
Oh, yeah. New York Rob.
New York
wait,
Rob.
Wait a second. So not L.A. Rob.
No, L.A. Rob's in L.A.
Oh, right. Sorry. New York Rob is here. You know, New York Rob, I should have known New York Rob was here when I checked Twitter and saw that New York Rob was hanging out in Lincoln Center.
Yep.
Going to see plays and shit. Going on walks through the park. Such a different person than L.A. Rob. Tell me, New York Rob, how's your visit been so far?
Well, it's been sort of a bit of a New York renaissance, really.
Of course.
No, it's... Like, I came down here, and I had a weekend to sort of kill, and I've spent a lot of it visiting various, like, museum exhibits, and I saw My Fair Lady at Lincoln Center yesterday.
I am so outstandingly impressed by you. So many people, by which I mean me, go to a place like I'm going to put 2 extra days on this trip before work just so I can like feel things out a little bit. And by that, what I mean is like my hotel room has a hot tub in it. I'm going to just relax. I'm going to watch the NBA finals.
I'm going to explore that room service.
I'm going to explore the room service menu. Exactly. You're actually doing the thing.
Well, like. Certainly, definitely had, like, a clarifying journey down here.
Yeah.
Oh, you almost died.
Yeah, like, I decided to drive, and I was going through Connecticut and hit, like, torrential, like, downpours.
Oh,
God. Which were, like, so bad. Like, so bad that, like, could not see anything around me. Like, it was whiteout conditions. There was a point where, like, went over this little ridge, and there were cars nearby, like, within 6 car lengths of me, went over this little rise. They all went over. I followed them over, and I was gone. Like, it was like the fog just sort of swallowed them up. And it was like that for 40 minutes, where I'm just driving, like, white knuckle through, like, massive standing water. Yeah. Can't see out my windshield.
Oh.
You can't see the signs for rest stops to pull over until they're already, like, past you. So it was just, like, 40 minutes of, like, I would do anything to get off this road right now safely. But I can't, so I just need to continue, like... looking at Waze telling me this road is straight, so I'm going to trust that and continue pointing the car straight.
The 2018 of road trips. Just I can't see what the future holds. It's scary. I just got to keep going forward, I guess.
Your phone. Faith in your phone.
But I got down here, and, like, the sun came out. I was in a hotel room, and I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to have my New York experience. I'm going to walk that fucking Brooklyn Bridge. Never done it before.
Nice.
Gonna do it.
Did you like it?
I did. I wish I was able to do it, like, earlier in the morning or something.
Yeah.
Because
it's a little warm.
Yeah, it was really warm. And
bring your own rainstorm. All the sweat from being outside right now.
Yeah.
But I think it was also, it was a walk that made me realize how much I think Instagram and like selfie culture have just changed what public spaces feel like now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really crowded on that pedestrian walkway. It's gorgeous. But everyone is out there, like, taking their selfies, and there's a lot of, like, you know, gaggles of generally young women, like, taking turns getting their iconic, like, you know, me and the Brooklyn Bridge and New York skyline.
Don't hate
photo.
The hustle.
Gotta look good, Rob.
Gotta look good.
Also, you were posting photos, so you were a part of this.
Yeah.
New York Rob is not immune.
No.
You
know?
No, and that's the thing. Like, there's an element of hypocrisy there. But
as long as we can recognize it.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, it's a slightly, it was a striking thing that agreed to what you were walking through people's, like, ongoing photo shoots.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're sort of, like, just stepping out into, like, foot traffic or, like, you know, nearly knocking cyclists sure. over to get there. I saw people doing some scary shit, too. Like, people hopping onto the girders.
No, to
get there.
Oh,
I was
God.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, it's going to be a good photo. Like, right, get the bikes.
But
I was like, young lady, get down from there. you are one stiff breeze away from being...
Were you so taken by My Fair Lady that you decided... To LARP and to step into character?
Young lady.
How many people's grammar did you correct?
Well, that's just me every day.
Okay.
It was gorgeous. Like, I enjoyed walking back home at night along the Manhattan Bridge a little better because it was, sure. like, higher, it was cooler, it was empty.
Yeah, it's a good view.
Yeah, like, it's really peaceful and beautiful. But, yeah, I went to... the new museum.
Love the new museum. Nice. What did you see? What were the exhibits?
There's a variety of exhibits. The one that really jumped out for me was the John Acumfra exhibit, which he is, what's the way to put this? Almost like an audio documentarian.
Okay.
And a lot of his work centered on the experience of minority and black communities in Britain in like the 70s and 80s. Hmm. But what they have at the new museum are these AV installations. Yeah. And they're really striking. Basically, you'll have like two or three screens and just a really rich like soundscape behind it. Like the two that jumped out at me were one was Transfigured Night, which is a juxtaposition of pictures of like modern life. And then, and including some modern life, like in Ghana, for instance, and then archival film of visits from like the decolonization period in Ghana's history. And it is bookended by two visits in very different times to the Lincoln Memorial. And it's one of those things, like the first time, like it was interesting being there. People like sit down and they're like, okay, it's an AV installation. They watch for 5 minutes and leave. You really do need to just like, give yourself over to it and just experience it.
Yeah.
Because, like, after it looped, like, I watched it a couple times, like, the ending of it becomes so powerful when you see the modern shots of the visit to sure. the Lincoln mm-hmm. Memorial. And at that point, the meaning of the entire work has become clear.
Right.
And then the other one that is really, really cool and a little more accessible maybe is Stuart Hall and Unfinished Conversation. Now, Stuart Hall was... sort of a cultural critic
fucking
and historian.
Such my jam. Stuart Hall is like an icon for me. Like I don't have many.
Dude, you got to get down there.
I absolutely will.
Because it's biographical. So it's right. him talking about growing up in Jamaica.
Yep.
But it's also sort of weaving together the entire context in which his career comes up. So again, around decolonization, around the Suez Canal crisis, mm-hmm. but also just talking about like there's this devastating moment where. He is back in Jamaica visiting, and he's talking about politics in Britain, which at that point were very divided over how Britain was reacting to the influx of West Indies immigrants who were themselves subjects of the British Empire.
Right.
So it wasn't like
right.
to people from the West Indies, they were like, "This isn't we're not immigrants. Like this is we're all British to an extent." That was a bit how Stuart Hall felt.
Right.
And he gets to Britain, he realizes that's 100% not true.
Right.
But he goes back to Jamaica, and his mother, who was, I believe, like from, like, I think his father was white, or at least very light-skinned Jamaican, and his mother was black. And his mother's like, I hope they don't think you're one of those immigrants.
Oh, wow.
And, like, it's this devastating moment where, like, her, like, it's already established, like, her entire life was sort of, like, really marked and marred by the lack of opportunity afforded to darker-skinned women in Jamaica. And, like, was kind of embittering. And here, you know, one of the reveals is it completely, like, sort of turns her politics.
Right. This is super fascinating, given the current conversations around the Windrush generation stuff in the UK, Jamaican immigrants whose status is currently being, or, like, children of Jamaican immigrants whose legal status in the UK is being threatened as they are not able to produce proper documentation for, like, aren't able to produce proper documentation. The documentation that was given at the time was so rushed and so, like, like unfinalized and all over the place that, like, as is often the case with, like, kind of immigration through the margins, immigration of decolonized places, stuff like that. It's just, like, such a interesting timing, I would say, for to do an exhibit on Hall, especially when it's so biographical, right?
Yeah, but also very, like, very stylized as well. Like, the other cool thing is the archival photography they found is tremendous. Like, that, like, if you like shots of, like, old industrial Britain, and, like,
sure,
just the, like, there's the shot of stokers going around and walking in a giant circle, all grabbing a shovel of coal, walking back to the furnace and tossing it in. And it's this, like, hypnotic, hellish photo you see. And then I had the classic wanting to get into a fight with somebody outside a museum exhibit.
Yes.
Because, like...
What happened?
New York Rob.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Culture this, and passion.
This fucking guy.
Were you the museum police, Rob?
No, I just...
I often am the museum police when I go to museums. Because whenever I see people touching shit... Or I just...
No, he just wasn't being respectful.
This is
up
an
here.
Ideological okay. issue.
Rob's pointing at his brain.
Yep. Okay.
Because we get out of this thing, and he's like, I just don't see why it couldn't have been a documentary. Like, I don't see why that had to be three screens. Like, what did it really add to any of this? Like, you could have just put this on, like, PBS or something.
And if you've read Stuart Hall's classic Encoding Decoding, you would understand there is no such thing as pure communication of details, and that the way that you communicate... Mm-hmm.
So you would have gotten in the fight, too, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah, but also, right. I'm like, I'm sorry, but here's the thing. There is an effect
yes.
created
yes.
by the three screen presentation
exactly.
having this rich soundscape and weaving together. Yes, you know what? It could have been a documentary, and it would have been a documentary that would have had a very different impact and feel
of
because
course.
It would have been a very traditional impact. But like, I'm sitting there, and I've had like two experiences that like almost moved me to tears, and like this fucking guy is like.
Could have been on Netflix.
I just don't understand. He didn't justify the use of that medium, and I'm like. You fucking right, games
up,
crit one sack of shit. I just don't understand. It's not. It doesn't lean into the interactivity of the medium. Like fuck yourself.
Was he wearing
man.
A fedora? Did he tip his hat?
No, he.
No,
was...
this is less. This is less that. I think Rob is painting the picture of like 2008, 2009 era like game blogger who.
Yeah, but he was very like.
Oh, okay.
Not a fedora, but like.
That type.
Grungy, lank-haired, white intellectual.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
but like,
that's totally what I'm...
Motherfucking
yeah.
loves Metal Gear Solid 2.
And just monologuing oh, to the two women that he was with, too.
Oh,
and
good.
Being like, I just don't see
Actually.
what was powerful about that. And I'm like, because you spent the entire time you were sitting there trying to be smarter than the thing you were fucking watching.
Ooh.
Oh, man.
Welcome to New York, Rob.
Fuck that guy.
Thank you for giving us the breakdown, the debrief.
Yeah.
Thanks for making me mad, but also I should get to the museum and see that exhibit.
Also, let me recommend this to you.
Yeah.
The Williamsburg Bridge. For good views, and it's never super crowded.
Oh, yeah. I walked across a couple times last year.
Oh, cool.
Year,
all right.
Yeah. All right. But, yeah, it's fun. I would say I have trouble. It feels like it's harder to get to cool things when you cross the Williamsburg Bridge. Like, you got to walk a little farther off each
one. Oh, yeah.
To
each
get
one
to
is
cool
very. There's like a whole half mile yeah. of bridge, even once you're past mm-hmm. the island on that one. But, yeah.
But the last things I did was a listener pointed me to a brutalism exhibit at
Ooh.
The New York
oh,
MoMA.
Right.
I saw that. Yes, yes, yes.
Very, no, it's very cool.
Yeah.
If you like, you know, brutalist architecture and sort of avant-garde architecture, mm-hmm. it's well worth a visit. I'm not sure it actually turned me around on brutalism.
I was going to say, because like, my understanding is that exhibit is, the goal of that exhibit is to recontextualize brutalism in a way that makes it, like, kind of detethers it to what we think of as really oppressive politics and actually tries to understand it as being, like, a very materialist in the good sense.
And style. There's some amazing stuff that, like, does, mm-hmm. like, oh, I didn't realize it could be this beautiful. There's also a lot of, like, somewhat oppressive looking, because there's, it's not just, I don't think it's just context that, like, it's Eastern European architecture, it, like, you know, smacks of oppression and such. I don't think it's just that. I think there's something about the way concrete wears, and so, like, large expanses of, like, you know, dingy, faded, or crumbling concrete, and, like, these huge constructions that begin to feel like...
But that's the truth of the situation, Rob. That's what makes it honest. That's why brutalism works. Mm. If the infrastructure fails, you can see it failing. It isn't hiding. And so that means you have to, like, push your local...
I got
to
it,
fucking fix
yes,
it.
I was thinking about this, though, but that's the problem, is, like, this did seem like an architecture that works well if the society always works well. Like, capitalism is very good at concealing its failures.
It sure is!
It's real good at that!
Oh, what happened to that neighborhood? I don't fucking know.
What happened to that DIY venue? Well, a place of employment.
Right, but, like, monumental brutalist architecture, it's like, oh, there it is.
Right.
Like, boy, the Ministry of Transportation is not what it used to be.
Right.
And, like, okay, now we all live with this massive, like, metaphor for the crumbling of our aspirations. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
And saw My Fair Lady, which is, like, my favorite musical. And it rocked.
Well, welcome again to New York. I'm glad to have you here. We're going to be playing a lot of Stellaris.
Yeah.
And talking through what the architecture of the future should look like anyway. So.
Will New York Rob show up for that?
New York Rob is here and always among you.
Oh,
this means maybe we won't have to kill as many people.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, well, if we have New York Rob, we might. Oh, no!
Rob is giving a thumbs down.
Well, hang on, let's remember why you summoned New York Rob.
I know.
Oh boy,
I know.
It's true.
I know. We'll get there at some point today.
The general will also show up today.
Oh. Natalie, I know that you didn't necessarily have as life-changing... Maybe you actually had a more life-changing experience, because, again, I have some messages from you in our Waypoint chat that were very just effusive in praise and in pride over finally conquering Hollow Knight.
I did. I did it. I finished it.
Finished it. Like, you did every boss that you could do.
Every
you did the
boss.
Trial of Fools, the level 30. Or
I,
the
did.
Full, like,
I did. The only, I did. There's only one boss... I did not do in the game, and it's because I chose a path that led me away from that boss.
That, like, locked out that boss.
Uh-huh.
Which boss was that?
That was the Nightmare King Grimm.
Okay, I watched that boss fight.
Wow,
it's a
that's
cool
a
fight.
Name.
It's fucking
that
cool.
Boss fight is like a bullet hell style.
Oh.
It's very, like, dependent on RNG, so mm-hmm. you really just have to be super reactive. And I kept thinking that boss fight was the first Grimm boss fight. Because every time I'd look up, like, Grimm boss fight tips, because that it's the same boss, just mm-hmm. the Nightmare Grimm does two masks of damage. So I kept looking up tips for it, and I was like, God, this is so hard, this is so hard, this is so hard. And then I beat Grimm, and then they were like, all right, go get more flames. And I was like, what? And I was like,
you only
oh.
beat the troop leader Grimm or whatever,
yeah.
right?
But
you
did
true
the
Nightmare
one
Grimm.
First?
No.
Oh, I see.
No, no, no.
Oh,
so, yeah. So the Nightmare King Grimm is, like, the next sort of stage after you, like, fully upgrade your Grimmkin, which is, like, this little companion that they give you when you summon the troop to Hollow Nest. Is it
also,
Hollow Nest?
Also Kim Killing.
Yeah.
I think Kin. I think
oh,
Kin.
Sorry. I think
Close,
you think
though.
Kim.
Yeah, Grim Kim would be a really good Twitter handle for Kim Kelly.
Yeah, it is. It's literally.
Oh, is it Grim Kim? Is
yes,
that? Okay. Well, there you go.
That's what it is.
That's really good.
That's really
sorry,
good.
I got really excited
really
there.
Good.
Anyway.
So I decided to go on a path that led me away from the Nightmare King Grimm, which I won't spoil here, but I will spoil in our spoiler cast, which should be later this week.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I watched a bunch of lore videos about the Nightmare King and about
I, just, I love the troop lore.
It's
the troop
really cool.
lore is really, really cool.
How do you feel about, like, what if hell was a circus that came to town and made a bunch of fucking noise? And also there's, like, weird cyclical birth and death and rebirth of, like, the hell
Carnival?
Creature. It's kind of Carnival. Carnival's
go.
So good.
It's real good.
Carnival's so good. Carnival rewatch podcast when
right
I mean
okay,
yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Archie first.
Yeah. In all things.
Archie comes first.
Town motto.
That's the foundation of his first, like, Imperium, right? Right, like,
yeah.
Archie right. among equals.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Come on.
What's the fucking QAnon bullshit? Where we go one, we go all. Where we go one, we go Archie. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
It's perfect.
QAnon, Q Archie.
That's. Is there a Q character in Archie in Riverdale?
Like a Q-like character.
Like a Q-like character. I guess it's... Anyway, we're going to keep moving.
Oh, it's Hiram.
It's Hiram.
A lot of ways.
Oh, sure.
Fuck Hiram. Anyway, we have to do it. We have to. I think I know the day.
We need to talk about your transcendent game finale experience.
Yes. So there are three possible endings in Hollow Knight, and I did the first two pretty easily.
So there's a thing where you can get all three endings.
There is a thing where you can get all three endings in one save file.
Right, right.
So I was on the third ending, which is the final true boss, because of course there is a pure way to play this game. There is some sort of trueness. But I finally beat it this weekend. I've been trying to beat it for like a couple weeks, I think. I think it's been like a week and a half that I've been trying to beat this last boss.
Is it a situation where you just like pick up the Switch and give it two or three tries and put it down?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And I picked it up on Saturday, or I think it was Friday maybe. I picked it up. I gave it one run. I was like, not the run. It's terrible. And I haven't, the thing with this boss is I haven't been getting very far in fighting this boss every mm-hmm. time I fight it. Like, every time I fight her, the Radiance, I never get to the second phase.
Which is really tough in a game like this because it means you can't practice the second phase.
Exactly.
Like, one of those things where, yeah.
And you also have to go through, the Radiance is access, so... I guess spoilers for...
Light spoilers how you access
this boss.
Right.
The Radiance is accessed through the first final boss. So you have to fight the final boss
really?
Every single time.
Fuck that. And there's no save in between?
No. Because you drew...
Don't tell me the specifics. Okay. Like, that sucks.
Yeah. So you have to fight the first boss every time you want to access...
Bloodborne's doing it easy by you, honestly. Yeah. Like, comparatively, even like the true final boss of Bloodborne... is in the situation where you have to re-fight the regular final boss of Bloodborne.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Yeah?
No, you just walk in there. You have to re-fight the...
Yeah, I don't know why I'm remembering it weird, but...
Well, there might be like a first stage, second stage thing, but this sounds like there's a whole boss, and
whole
then...
A whole boss, and then a whole boss.
A whole boss that does have multiple stages.
Yeah, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. brutal.
Yes, that's a lot.
Like, I'm curious, what's the hook for you to, like...
Keep
put
going.
Yourself through all this. Because, like, you're at that breaking point with Bloodborne. What got you through Hollow Knight?
I think just being so much more invested. Like, I feel like with Hollow Knight, I had the ability to just keep going in a way that I don't. And this is the whole Blood Vial mm-hmm. conversation. And every time I hit a boss that I was just stuck at, I could at least... just keep, like, in the repetition of it, just keep going and going and going. And a lot of times that was the thing that, like, made me finally get just, like, memorizing those patterns and having that enough time to just keep reattacking the same thing. With Bloodborne, you are not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. Just the game does not allow you to do that because of the healing mechanic of the game with the blood vials and everything like that. But in Hollow Knight, everything is contained, like, your healing is, you already have it. You just need to, like, gain soul to, like, be able to do it, and there's a way to make that much easier in late game stuff. So whenever I just, like, I got really good at beating the first boss. Like, the first boss became, like, cake for me.
Okay.
So
it was just a matter of, like, I need the time to quickly run through that first boss.
Yeah.
But that's not a challenge.
Right? Yeah, definitely not a challenge, unless I was just being kind of sloppy. But it's definitely I've fought harder. There are harder bosses in that game than that last boss. So when I finally got to Radiance, I wasn't getting very far. And then on my second run on Friday, I got to the third... I got to the second phase for, like, the second or third time, which I would never do.
Right.
And then I was just like, is this?
Do you ever just make the decision, like, I'm going to win now? Or you're just like, oh, this is it. I'm going to win this time.
I was like, it was really funny because my my boyfriend and his, like, music collaborator were working on music in the apartment. And I was just, like, in this, like, my boyfriend's apartment is situated so, like, the bed is, like, a cubby almost. So I had, like, the curtains drawn. And I was just, like, in full darkness with headphones on. And I was just completely, like, no one knew what they knew I was playing games. I don't know.
Secret Hollow Knight.
I was just going in this run. And then I just, in the second phase, I had this, like, sort of moment of light. I was like, this might be it. This could be the moment that I beat Radiance? And I did it. And then I, like, yelled out, but they both had their headphones, their noise-canceling headphones on. So I was like, I did it! And I, like, didn't hear anything. I was like, what? And I, like, opened the curtain, and they're just, like, in their own boss fight. And
this
is,
like, one of those modern things. This is almost Tati-esque, like, satire. Yes.
Black Mirror Season 4. Yeah. None of us speak anymore, and one person finally yells out, but no one hears them. This is the contrasts with you playing the game here at your desk, where you literally two or three times last week were like, ah! And, like, me and Danielle have to, like, twist our heads and like, what's happening? Are you okay? And, like, yeah, you're fine.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, having done that, was it just like a, here's your sticker, kid, you beat the game in the hardest, or did it also, like, unveil something about the game?
Oh yeah, no, there's another, like, lore ending, and then there's also a third, a fourth ending that you get because I did something in right before fighting the boss. So there's, like, a little thing you can do, and then there's, like, an after ending. But yeah, so there is, like, a new sort of, like, lore thing that's revealed at the end.
That was fulfilling and satisfying, not just, like,
so fulfilling. And, like, even though I had already kind of known, I hadn't watched, like, what exactly, like, the last ending sort of cut screen would be, but I knew what the lore was because I've been watching, like, Austin and I've been watching, like, tons of Hollow Knight lore videos, and it was still...
Don't give me that look. I'm not going to finish that game, but I want to know what happens.
Yeah.
It still was so satisfying, and I'm honestly very, very sad that I finished the game. Like, it is one of those games that I, like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Like, I picked up a couple games over the weekend. I picked up Celeste. I picked up, I tried out Enter the Gungeon.
Okay.
And then I started New Breath of the Wild file.
Hell yeah.
You've been busy.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I played a lot of games this weekend.
Breath of the Wild seems like a good palette cleanser in a really good way.
Those three, in a weird way, feel like you are finding different things about Hollow Knight in each of them, like with platforming, with difficulty, with, like, sort of Twitch skills, and then with the, like, world and lore and, like, kind of openness of
I think Breath of the Wild.
You're trying to make a Frankenstein version.
I play Celeste for, like, 30 minutes. I die, like, 200 times, and I'm like, all right, I'm done. Try to enter the gungeon. I die. I'm like, okay, I'm done. Play Breath of the Wild. I'm like, ah.
Right.
Peace.
Yay.
Exploration. I replayed Breath of the Wild. So fucking bad.
So good.
So, yeah. So I think Breath of the Wild is going to be the thing that takes it kind of, that's going to be the next thing I pour into.
You've not beaten that game, right? You've like,
no, I haven't.
20-30 hours into it?
I've over 50 hours into it. Okay. Beat that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's how that game goes.
That's how that game goes.
Rob, did you ever wrap that one up? I know you put some time into it.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was just really distracted thinking about brutalism. I'm sorry. I was thinking about, like, the honesty of brutalism.
What about, like, the brutalism Zelda with brutalist design?
Ooh, that'd be really satisfying.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
God damn.
Yeah.
All the dungeons are brutalist structures.
Well, I don't want it to be the dungeons. I want it to be the towns. I want it to be, like,
oh yeah. Whole thing, maybe.
I want there to be, the arc, there's already really interesting architecture in, like, Breath of the Wild.
Sure, of course.
But, like, I want, like, varying architectural styles that really reflect a wider, or not that there isn't already an interesting array of architectural styles, like Tarrytown's weird modular homes versus the huts of, what is the little fishing village called?
Oh,
I always forget his last place I found. Exactly. But you know, like that.
It's L something, right?
Yeah, Lorelin, something like that. Anyway. Yeah.
Lorelai?
That
does Gilmore Girls?
Gilmore, that sounds like a Gilmore Girls. That's what
that
is.
That's where Link goes to retire, with a Gilmore Girls.
But yeah, no, I would love one that's like, give me like contemporary architectural styles. Give me, I guess.
New Donk City.
Give me New Donk City. Give me the New Donk City of Zelda. That's all I want. Is. We should take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk some WarioWare, we'll talk about some Dead Cells, which I've been playing a lot of, then maybe we'll get some waypoints. Alright, we will be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back, and we are going to talk more about video games and the world.
I love video games. The world? The world has problems.
The world has problems. Does the world of WarioWare Gold for the Nintendo 3DS have problems?
Oh, shit, Wario be
is
here.
Is Wario a problem?
He is a problem.
Is he?
He knows he's a problem.
Oh.
Because this game sort of starts off with a cutscene that weirdly feels a little bit like a cell phone.
Really?
It's a little bit... It's like a corporate parody of game companies.
Okay.
Because here's the setup for this game. So it's a WarioWare game, so it's micro games.
Right.
Of course.
It's like a collection of past WarioWare games, right?
I think there's many. There's some new stuff and some old
but
stuff.
But it doesn't have the Angela levels, right? That's what I've been hearing.
I haven't played an Angela level yet. The thing is, I can't play my 3DS for very long because my wrist is fucked up.
Right.
So, like, I have to actually play it in micro doses, which is sort of weirdly appropriate for a WarioWare game. But, yeah, the setup for these games has always been Wario wants to make money in some fashion, so you play a bunch of tiny, teeny, tiny minigames that you play within, like, 5 seconds. I think 4 seconds usually is, like, how long each of these games lasts. You try to make, you know, outlast things, and you get points for outlasting things. Well, in this one, Wario... You know, he of Prince Greed of Nintendo Town.
Is he a wait? Is that a thing?
I'm giving him the title.
Okay,
Prince.
You have the
Greed.
Ability to just give Nintendo.
You
titles?
Didn't know that? I do. Wait, I do all their sound effects. You didn't know.
Oh, I knew that part, but I didn't know that you had like title. I didn't know you had like Queen Danielle can just be like, ah, you are a prince, the Prince of Greed.
Yeah, the Prince of Greed, Prince of Thieves, damn. Prince of Greed. Mario is the Prince of Butt Cracks.
It's good to have.
That feels like anti plumber.
But he like
right
shows
there.
His
like,
butt.
I hate plumbers.
Does he wait? Question: does he show his butt?
No, he shows his nipples overalls in Odyssey, and that's the most he's ever shown of anything. And you know,
I never saw Mario's butt in my life.
Maybe in that live action movie.
He uses his butt so much, though. He butt stomps everything.
Yeah, but I haven't seen. If he
I've
has
seen
a
his
crack.
Cheeks.
Have we seen his cheeks?
He's got cheeks
accentuated through his jeans.
Yeah, exactly. He's got cheeks.
There's been moments.
Okay.
He wears the shit out of those jeans.
He does. Those overalls.
You know he
does. There is implied crash,
Chef's
I guess.
Kiss.
Implied butt
plumber's
crack.
Kiss. Plumber's kiss.
Is that what you call a plumber's crack? A plumber's kiss?
A plumber's kiss. That's a different thing. We have to keep moving.
We got to keep going.
Okay, I'm sorry. WarioWare. Prince Wario.
Agreed.
Agreed. Has decided he's going to have a video game tournament, a design tournament. So he can make, you know, he can get free labor from all of his friends.
Yeah, wait, is he really doing a fucking...
For free. Yeah, this is really how this game starts.
Like a spec game jam?
Yes.
Fuck.
Yes, that's how they... I'm telling you, it's a little bit of a corporate self-own. Like, you know, we're going to exploit your labor. That's what Wario's doing.
That's
there's a cutscene that starts out, and I'm, like, playing this like, oh, okay. You guys went there. That's kind of cute. All right. And then, you know, various designers have their little sections of the games. And it's, cool. And it's divided into, I think it's, like, the Mash Central, the Spin Central, and the something, maybe it's Shake Central. I forget. But there's different, like, divisions of, like, basic inputs. Like, the Mash one is mashing buttons and also using, like, a D-pad, you know, the input, that kind of thing. It's really fun. Really good. I like the cell phone. That's enjoyable.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking quite a bit about how Wario is supposed to be Mr. Greedy and he's so terrible and he's so awful, right? But like, Mario is such a capitalist too. He's getting coins everywhere he goes.
It's true.
He's just as greedy.
And he works for the state. He works for the monarch, not just the state, the monarchy.
The monarchy.
He's trying to. He's
a reactionary.
He is not just a reactionary. He's also a royalist. He's both.
Yeah, dude.
Which is not that. I mean, this is obviously a conflict between like royal powers. King Koopa, Princess Peach. Obviously, this is not. But.
But is King Koopa actually a king, or is he a self-titled?
Yeah.
I don't.
There's a degree of like satire in his own name.
I think he's made himself king. Which isn't to say that that's not how kings have become kings.
Right,
in the past.
Totally.
But perhaps he is the beginning of a monarchy.
Maybe he didn't give himself that title. I can imagine a world in which the Mushroom Kingdom was like, oh yes, King Koopa.
So are you saying his underlings? I'm saying, as in the
King of the Koopas.
He did this to him. Yeah.
Wow.
You
know?
Pronounced like Herod in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh my God!
But then that makes Bowser our savior.
That's been true for a while. You know,
Bowser, come save us.
Apparently, the only real revolutionary in the Mario. I mean,
100%. So in Japan, the character bears the title of Daimao. Which is Great Demon King. In the U.S., the character is first referred to as Bowser, King of the Koopas, and the Sorcerer King, which I did not know was the Sorcerer King.
Well,
in the
first
States.
Game, he sends out, like, magic-y stuff, doesn't he?
I thought those were fireballs.
The fireballs, right?
Maybe he has
a wand.
Well, he's a demon. Does he have a wand?
He's a demon.
He's making the fire go somewhere.
That's true.
Damn, I didn't know he was the fallen angel.
Yeah.
Right? This all comes together.
Damn, I didn't know Nintendo was a Christian company.
I'm still kind of fixed it. So, like, WarioWare's protest art now? Is this what we're getting at?
Kind of feels like a little bit.
Like, literally, it's an exploitative game jam, and then all the segments of the game are made by designers at Nintendo showing their wares to the higher ups and being like, here's my project.
Kind of seems like
it. That's troubling.
It's a little troubling, but also a little bit like, well, at least you're wearing it on your sleeve. Well, yeah. Also, you're showing it off to the world, so maybe.
That's why I can only stand Waluigi.
Yeah?
He's the only one I can stand.
Is that only because, like, we don't know enough about him?
Yeah.
So he's in so few games.
Yeah, that's... let me live in the ignorance of his past.
In the Waluigi ignorance.
Who else can I stand in that game?
Who is the... he's Chain a prince Chomp. Of.
Chain Chomp, mindless.
Yeah,
wait,
like
what about
dog?
Yoshi? Come on, Yoshi.
No.
Yoshi?
Oh my God!
I'm not a Yoshi fan.
What the fuck?
I don't dislike... I'm not a Jeff Gerstmann who I'm like, kill all Yoshis, but like...
he just wants to eat the little fruits off the tree.
And also...
Okay, maybe
Shy
Super
Guys,
Mario Bros.
Also the bones of his enemies.
And also the bones of his enemies, including the bone turtle people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yes.
And he's a cannibal.
Right. Well, yeah. Okay, wait. He doesn't eat other Yoshis, right?
I don't know. He's got eggs.
And they spits them out, and you got another Yoshi there.
Yeah, I don't know how any of that works.
The egg comes from his stomach.
It's like a marsupial.
And then it comes out his mouth.
He doesn't eat it.
Yeah, yeah.
But where did it get there?
From eating like a Shy Guy or whatever.
And then he make the egg.
Then he make the egg.
Okay.
Sometimes he squirt the juice, too.
Sometimes he squirt the juice, too.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yoshi's been mistreated by Mario for years.
Yeah, he's been punching
that's
him in
true.
The head.
I'm with you. I'm with
he's
you.
Been punching
I'm on free
Justice
Yoshi.
For Yoshi's. Free yeah. Yoshi. Hashtag free Yoshi. But also...
also, Yoshi's rainbow, so Yoshi's gay.
Is Yoshi rainbow?
Because he comes in all colors and sizes.
So Shy Guys... Shy Guys,
I guess
Yoshi's.
Shy Guys just kind of get eaten sometimes, I guess is what you're
that's
saying.
Just that's just what he likes
do. We
to
like
do.
Shy Guy?
I'm pro Shy Guy.
Shy Guys are very
I'm Shy Guy.
Sure
guy. Wearing a mask, walking around.
Oh, he's been in a lot of the...
Also...
He's been in Captain Toad. That's what Shy Guy's been up to. He's been Captain Toad Treasure Tracker. Yeah. Well, he's kind of a bad guy, but still.
Yeah,
whatever.
See, I'm this
but
one
doing
says,
what?
Guy Fawkes
what makes him a bad guy? What's he do?
That's the thing.
He comes in and he hurts Toad.
That's the thing.
It's no, well, he doesn't.
Toad
he's walking around.
So hold on.
But Toad walks up, and
well,
then
he
when
does,
he
does
when
come
he
over to try
Toad.
To attack Toad.
No, because he's just hanging out in his house.
No, but when he sees Toad.
But why is Toad there in the beginning? Why does his captain show up?
He's trying to steal the treasure.
Trying to steal the treasure. My motherfucker has a safari hat on and everything.
Yeah, I know.
My guy is like,
he's,
kicking down
he's
the door.
A
damn, I didn't know Toad
shit.
And Lara Croft had a
but
thing going
Rob
on.
Rob has a whole Toad thing. Rob is not wrong.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, yeah, Toad is clearly the most evil character in Mario. Mm-hmm. I mean, 100%. Like Toad is doubtless an informer.
Yep.
Toad is, like, the loyal servant of the regime. And
Toady is right there.
Okay.
And is greedy and jealous of the power he's assumed under that system and will jealously guard it from any change to the status quo, which benefits him, even though it oppresses his fellows. Yeah, no.
It's true.
Toadette.
I don't know shit about Toadette either. All I know is that's Nintendo why I can stand like... her.
The less we know, the more.
Toad, but make it pink. That's, yeah. That's, okay. Great. Something thanks, Nintendo. On.
Toad, but don't give it a gender.
Yep.
But make it pink.
But make it pink.
Put
a little edit at the end.
That seems like a cool game.
It's a fun WarioWare. Game.
I love the WarioWare games.
They're really so fun.
I'm like such a fucking...
They're so goofy.
Chumpies. I'm like, oh, put it on Switch. I'm like, I know, it's not... But I wish it was on
but
Switch.
Why not? Why not?
We'll get a WarioWare on Switch in the next 3 years.
It worked just fine on the Switch.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why not.
I think it's collecting all the DS and 3DS stuff plus some new stuff. I'm like, I bet those assets don't look great on the Switch.
Yeah,
probably not.
I guess, but
just gotta do some more labor.
Just gotta, yeah, yeah,
just throw some more labor at it.
I'm sure there will be. We'll get a really good WarioWare game on the Switch.
Yeah,
speaking
WarioWare,
of Switch,
Switch it up.
That's a great
title
name.
You need.
Done. Switch it
I
up.
I did it. I told you I worked for Nintendo.
Damn! If that comes out,
WarioWare, switch it up, baby.
That's a good name. Speaking of the Switch, I've been playing Dead Cells on the Switch. If you don't know what Dead Cells is, you should tune in to Patrick's daily streams of it this week. He's doing a morning stream every day, playing through Dead Cells, which is a Metroid-style, Castlevania-style, Metroidvania-style roguelike, action roguelite, I guess, in the vein of something like Metroid or Castlevania. You're exploring, much more early Castlevania, in that there's a series of levels. It's not a big open-world map.
Okay.
It's you go through a level, you kill a bunch of enemies, the combat feels incredibly satisfying. It has, like, such a great... The comparison I would make is to almost watching a contemporary, like, action movie in the kind of John Wick or like, the most recent Mission Impossible. Mm-hmm. Very kinetic feeling, very, like, movement-oriented around... Like, there's good screen shake, and there's good moving through and past enemies via rolls and stuff like that. It's a lot more Bloodborne in its feel than like, a Dark Souls, so it's not a very, like, stand in your place, block, and parry and counterattack, and there are shields and stuff. In my experience, the play is very much like an archer goes to shoot you. You roll under the bolt, and you get up, and you, like, hit him 3 or 4 times. And the thing that makes the game, puts the game in kind of the roguelite category is that it's run-based, so when you die, you start over from the beginning, a new map is generated according to the same basic principles. There's kind of like a series of maps, sort of mm-hmm. like something like Spelunky, where you go from caves to mines to blah, 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 right? But also, you're rebuilding the character each time. And the way that you build your character is a combination of weapons. So you get 2, like, primary weapons. Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe you have a sword and a bow, and there's a bunch of different types of swords and a bunch of different types of bows. So maybe you have the bow that's slower but shoots 2 arrows at once, or you have the bow that is super fast but mostly does damage from very up close. The arrows don't go very far. Maybe you have the sword that is like a blood sword and does bleeding damage to your enemy, or you have the one that is like perfectly balanced and does a lot more damage up front but doesn't do any like damage over time stuff. Then you also have, like, utility items. And that can be anything from, like, a grenade or a freeze grenade that freezes people in place. Patrick had a lot of good work done with a freeze grenade in the first stream he did.
Yeah.
To traps and turrets and... This is a bunch of different equipment options. And you unlock... either find them in the world in a given run, or you can unlock blueprints for them as you play through the game by killing an enemy and getting a blueprint. And then you can also unlock the ability to get a random weapon or item at the beginning of the game. And so that means you go from, like, every game you start with the basic-ass regular sword or a shield and a bow, to eventually, like, okay, what am I going to get this time? Okay, I got the blood sword, and I got the super slow but super powerful crossbow or whatever, right? And so then you immediately start making these builds. On top of all that, you're increasing your character stats in any given run, and the stats are super simple. It's like health and then how much damage you do with red, purple, or green items. And that's just like, it's very simple. It's like, oh, I'm going to do a red build this time. I'm just dumping points into red, and that means I'm going to do lots of damage with like melee weapons and just like very straightforward, like regular grenades. Or I'll dump points into purple and do, like, a very tactical build where I'm doing kind of magic stuff. I'm doing, like, an ice blast and a lightning whip and then some turrets. And you wind up with a collection of things that are not always in that same color grouping. So you might have, like, a really powerful hammer, but then which is red, and then the ice blast, which freezes enemies, but that's purple. It's like, well, am I going to dump points into red so that my hammer hits are really powerful, or into purple so that when I freeze people, I do enough damage to, like, set them up for the hammer kill or whatever. That stuff is all really, really fun. But the thing that just makes it work for me is just the moment-to-moment feeling of combat. The levels all introduce new enemies each time that you go through. And then the way that it wraps back around to being a kind of Metroid-style game is that as you go through the game, you fight mini-bosses and regular bosses. And in both cases, you end up with new abilities that unlock different pathways through previous levels. So, like, you're not necessarily going in a single run forward to level 3 and then coming back to level 1. What you're doing is playing through to level 3, beating the level 3 boss who gives you the ability, or mini-boss on level 3 or whatever, who gives you the ability to turn, like, a little bit of moss into a vine that you can climb. Oh. And on your next run, if you find one of those vine or moss patches, you can turn it into a vine and then go through
so those carry
to a different
over.
Exit. Those carry over.
Interesting.
Those carry over. The blueprints carry over.
The blueprints are just assembled with, like, material, like,
no,
items?
No, so you just, the blueprints are just, like, they add it, an item to the pool. Okay. So that, like, you can find it more often and so that it can show up at the beginning of the game as one of your random starting things.
Gotcha.
You can also, you're also buying blueprints as you play through the game. Mm-hmm. Like, you between every level, you get your health back and you get to spend your cells, mm-hmm. which are, like, big, weird blue orbs. They're sort of, like...
And they're not dead.
I guess they're live. I guess they're alive. I would say that they're alive. They're big and blue and pulsing. It feels alive.
That seems alive.
But you're getting them from dead things. You're right. Killing things.
Dead. They're dead, but the cell is alive.
They could be energy. Right, exactly. And your Dora cells. Yeah, exactly. And you pay them to this guy who has a big... There's lots of weird characters. Mm-hmm. Lots of, like, big, weird people with masks on, messing around with cells and juices. Okay. You get some mutations. Find a lot of your old bodies in the game. There's a really interesting narrative layer.
Your character's old bodies.
Mm. And there's a guy next to him who's like, hey, I'm in charge of mutations. Like, what do you want this time? And, like, there's some cool narrative stuff where the game will signal to you. Like, there'll be a spark on the screen, and you'll go into a little room. It's like, okay, this isn't a combat room. The game timer pauses. You can explore the room and, like, hit a button to inspect things, like an old journal or, like, a map on the wall. I expected it to be more like Hollow Knight in mm-hmm. tone, where it would be, like, kind of melancholy, and, like, it's a similar thing, like, it takes place in a fallen kingdom
right.
that was consumed by a disease, like, it's the very Dark Souls fantasy style thing, but it's a very tongue-in-cheek game, comparatively.
Yeah, it seems a little goofy.
It's a little goofy. Playful, it has moments.
Maybe, or, yeah,
yeah I would go all the way to goofy, actually. All more right. than just playful. Like, there are definitely moments of just, like, your character will do a shrug sometimes.
Yeah, the shrug is really good.
All the way to cartoonish. Yeah. And it works for the game. I think there are times it's a miss, but by and large, I think it works. And as much as I would like it to try to do the Hollow Knight vibe or mm-hmm. the Dark Souls vibe, I don't know that it could pull it off. Not just because of the quality of writing, but because of the structure. Like,
yeah.
Unlike Hollow Knight, which sees the world locked in place.
Yeah.
And sees you just running through it again and again. So much is up to the randomization here that couldn't pull it off. Like it
makes sense to be goofy in the face of, like, that randomization, because
thing.
You're like, oh well, this is what I got.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's not like, I'm back here again, reliving my walk through this hallway.
Yeah.
The randomization basically works too, and the runs are short enough that. Like, when you first start off, the runs can be a little longer because you're being very patient and taking time.
Mm-hmm. But you've gotten past that?
Oh, yeah, because you're rewarded for playing very quick.
Oh.
There are special doors that open up if you get to them quick enough that are filled with resources.
Gotcha.
And I don't always get those, but mm-hmm. those are pretty good par times in a sense, where it's like, okay, if you get to the first whole stage and mm-hmm. get to this door that's going to be early on in stage 2 within 2 minutes... then you can open it, and inside is, like, a ton of money and an upgrade scroll to upgrade your stats. And
wait,
it's like,
You said scroll.
Scroll.
Thought you said scroll. Squirrel.
Oh, squirrel.
And upgrade, I was like, squirrel. The upgrade squirrel.
The upgrade squirrel.
All right, I got
will,
you up,
will give you better stats.
There you go.
Sound squirrel.
Will be there.
Yeah, conquer. There we go. And so, like, I don't always hit 2 minutes, but I'm mm-hmm. way closer to 5 than 15.
Gotcha.
I started off going through that whole first level, like, I'm going to be here for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You just get so much more confident with taking on enemies quickly.
Yeah.
And also being better at judging when you're going to hit a dead end and, like, I'm in this room. Oh, that's the little thing that will teleport me. I don't need to be in this room at all because I don't have the teleportation power yet. Boop, back out, mm-hmm. you know? Go ahead.
I think, like, the kineticism, I think in games that play like that, I've often had sort of a mixed relationship with them because, sure. like, okay, I think of a game like Mirror's Edge, where, like, when you were locked in and everything's going your way and you can almost hear, like, the Run Lola Run soundtrack, in your head, totally, and you're just, like, all momentum and movement and energy. Transcendent. But if you fall off that rhythm and you're trying to chase the beat, it feels like shit.
Yeah.
And games like this where, like, I tend to be a little more deliberate in my playstyle anyway, forcing myself, does it do a good job of, like, letting you find and stay in that groove?
Yes, totally. Because, like, you don't have to chase those par times, so to speak, right? Those are faster than what a normal player, I think, would ever do in their regular run. They're just a useful gauge for, like, hey, do I feel powerful enough yet? Is there something in the mechanics that I'm missing? Is this build working for me? When I get a really long time on any given level, it tends to be because I'm not using all my tools, because I don't like the weird bear traps that I can throw out and they're slowing me down, or I'm struggling to use a shield when really what I want is a bow or a lightning whip or something like that. And it can teach me that, right? What I will say is there is a real range of play styles. And if you want to be slow and methodical, again, Patrick was playing on Friday, and the build that he found was very tool-oriented. It was very, like, he had a lot of purple items. So he was tossing down the bear traps and turrets to take care of enemies he couldn't take on straight ahead. Yeah. And he was like, boom, I'll just drop this turret. Boom, I'll just drop this bear trap that'll hold in place.
The freeze grenade, turret. Like,
he had a fire spell also where he was, like, throwing a torch on the ground that was lighting it up, like the holy water in Castlevania or something like that.
Oh, yeah, like oil.
And so that was turning into, like, you should really try it.
Very me. Yeah, very immersive simmy-ish.
Totally.
Not, like, all the way.
But, like, the tools, the way that those things interact.
Yes.
Exactly. I think you'd like it a lot. Yeah. And those different builds are just so fun to figure out. And the flow of combat is so good. So, like, that build totally works. And the thing that when he was into it, the flow, the rhythm that he was finding was not just, I'll stay up on one level and toss down stuff. Mm-hmm. The best moments are when he was fighting kind of on two fronts.
Yeah.
Setting up a turret and the oil on the ground on one level, and on the second level fighting smaller enemies while his turret picked away at the large one.
Yeah.
He even got past the first boss, the first real boss of that game, using that strategy.
Yeah.
That boss can give you a lot of trouble. Like, it really, really can. Whereas, like, some of my favorite strategies are, like, two twin blades that heal me on each hit.
Ooh.
And I'm just, like, in the face of something with, like, a freeze blast to slow them down when I need to.
Yeah.
And those both feel good.
Yeah. The points of contact with...
Yeah. I will say that I think that the there can be a long arc of progress. It can sometimes feel like I just did a run and didn't get anything out of it.
Mm.
It sucks to lose, like, 30 cells that you could be investing in. Like, one of the things you can invest in is how many heal flasks you have. It's like Dark Souls more than, like, Bloodborne, in that you have a flask that heals you.
It will refill between
every
runs,
run and every level. It refills,
right? Okay.
So it's not just, like, one for the whole run. In between every level, you refill it, and you can upgrade it to hold more uses. So, like, mine is at 2, and I'm, like, dumping points into it to try to get up to 3. And it's one of those games, too, where you're like, I will never have that many fucking cells. What are you, like, there's an upgrade that I'm working on now that's 1,000 cells.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw that.
I was like, when would I ever get that? And then finally I had an incredible run where I went, like, 6 or 7 levels deep, I guess 6 levels deep, and had, at one point, came back home with, like, 80 cells. I was like, oh, shit, okay, do 8 of those runs. That's not a problem. And then I'm there, you know, between that one level gave me 80 and the past 4 levels gave me 30 or 40 total, like, that'll work out. It's a cool game. I wish I had had time to wrap
Switch,
it up.
Right?
It is on Switch. Okay. I will say, I think if you have PS4 or PC or something, to probably get it there.
Gotcha.
Some of the later levels on Switch get so busy that there's absolutely slowdown, and it can feel bad. Like, it can feel. I'm gonna keep playing on the Switch. I like having it in bed. I like having it on commute.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it does struggle a little bit, which is such a shame because it's such a pretty game. It's pixel art, but it's like the color usage is really great.
The animations are so good.
They're really good. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a comparison. Like, it is very much in the Symphony of the Night vibe in some way, but a little more detailed than that.
Okay.
Really beautiful vistas. And again, level based, and it's not like you do end up getting familiar with the levels. Like, okay, here I'm on the ramparts, I'm going to see the sunset again. But it's still pretty, even the 3rd or 4th or 15th or 20th time you've seen that sunset. It's still a pretty sense.
Hell yeah. So
that has been what I've been playing.
I kind of want to play it.
It's good.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go into waypoints before we wrap up today. Sound good?
Yeah, let's do it.
Run a little
bit
over.
Waypoint it.
Let's waypoint. What have people been up to besides going to museums and playing mini game collections?
Beach.
Any? Beach.
Can my waypoint be the beach?
Talk to me about the beach.
Can it be Brighton Beach?
Totally.
Because Brighton Beach is beautiful and good.
Okay.
And really nice.
Tell me about Brighton Beach.
It took me like 2 hours to get there yesterday. Because you know what beach traffic is like in this city?
Oh, God.
It ain't good. And I should have just taken the damn queue in the bus. That's what I did to get home.
That's what you do.
Way better.
I bet.
Honestly.
But you were like, I'll take a car.
But I was like, it'll be faster to take a car.
It's not.
Google lied to my face. But anyway, the beach is wonderful. There's a really nice boardwalk. It's right next to Coney Island. I ran on that boardwalk. It was 90 degrees, and it was beautiful, and it was majestic.
It sounds so hot.
And sometimes it's good to just get outside.
I'm hot. Just thinking.
It was really hot. It was hot, but here's what you get to do. Ready? Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
You work out. You get up a sweat. It's really hot. You run right into the ocean.
Just literally turn left.
It feels like the best thing in the universe. Sure. It's cool. It's nice. You got the waves. It's relaxing. My waypoint is the beach.
It's a good waypoint.
And I'm very, very pleased.
Rob, plans to go to Brighton Beach on this trip?
Not going to be able to squeeze it in.
Ah, damn.
Honestly, I would probably go back to the Comfra exhibit again. Like, the one thing I'd do again, I would go back. Like,
so
if you want to go see Stuart Hall before
I would love to
clear out of town. This,
sadly, I cannot fit that in the next 2 days.
Yeah.
But
we're not going to podcast from there?
We'll do a pod. We'll do Solaris live.
Solaris
from the
live
museum.
From the exhibit.
Yeah.
I could make that pitch to them.
We're art.
You know, exploring.
It's performance art.
If Ninja could perform at Lollapalooza.
Yeah, right?
Ninja on stage at Lollapalooza. Is this your
waypoint? Ninja had a stream perform.
Oh, right.
I missed this.
I sent it to you.
Was that
Lollapalooza? That was that Red Bull thing I sent
you.
Oh,
I saw the... Okay.
So at Lollapalooza, Ninja was streaming. Come by and see Ninja. And he's playing with all your favorite musical acts. He had a one-to-one...
He's playing an instrument. Right? He's playing an instrument.
The keyboard.
In a way, he's got a keyboard and a mouse.
Austin's fully and completely asleep. I didn't watch it. I just mentioned that because we were talking about.
Right.
Yeah. So we could be.
Performance art.
Performance art.
Yeah.
If Ninja can.
Yeah.
Ninja's probably better at anything than us. So.
I mean,
Striven.
There it is.
An interactive. AV political philosophy installation.
It's true.
Austin Walker, Daniel Rando, Rob Zachney.
Yeah.
Visions of militant utopianism.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
There
mm-hmm.
it is.
That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there.
I'd watch that.
Hey, yo, curator, get at me. Let's make it happen.
We might have one.
We might have
one. Have one in the audience.
It's true.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
We almost certainly do.
Who
could say?
I feel like we're the kind of crowd who might draw a curator or two.
I would hope so. Totally. I think we've got emails from people in the curative field.
Two.
So,
too.
Natalie, Rob, waypoint for the week.
I'm looking at you, Rob. You first. Okay. I'm still thinking about
New York,
mine.
Rob, what's your waypoint?
Other than the six things you suggested during your segment.
But yeah.
Oh, God, it's got to be new.
It doesn't have to be, but if you'd like to defer, that's fine.
I'll defer.
Okay.
I'm passing. I'm sorry.
Passing?
I need a minute.
I mean,
I can't do My Fair Lady again, even though I really want to talk about it. I'll talk about it in a minute.
Talk about it.
New York Rob, you're allowed to talk about My Fair Lady.
We barely got your My Fair Lady, like, okay. feelings.
Yeah. It's real, real good. But it's good. It's interesting.
Pretend
it's
I don't
good.
Know anything about My Fair Lady. What's My Fair Lady?
My Fair Lady is the musical version of Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, which is about Professor Henry Higgins, a professor of like language and phonetics, who takes a Cockney flower girl off the street and is like, I'm going to make you a proper lady. And they both get something out of it, which is like, for him, this is a fun experiment. Can I basically subvert the class structure of England by turning this piece of gutter trash? Like, this is like the way he describes it in the opening.
Yeah,
like,
this is
I
very
can turn
much,
this,
yeah.
yeah, like piece of gutter trash into like a
what
proper
a guy.
Lady.
Yeah,
well,
pretty woman, but
a little bit. Yeah, although
right, make right. it British.
Yeah, but I will British. Say, is, even in the text, one of Higgins' points is that, like, it's kind of, this entire class system is kind of bullshit, and it's all artifice, and, like, yeah. if you could erase the outer signs of class, like, honestly, people wouldn't fucking know, because it's all artificial.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But at the same time, what he doesn't extend to is, like, having any regard for her as right. a person or human being, and she has no agency in his experiment. Like, yeah. to him, it's his experiment. It's not their story. It's not her story.
Right, right.
But Eliza does choose all this, and she is the one who, like, actually says, if, you know, you talk a good game, but, like, do you actually want to try to do this? Let's go for it. For her, this is her shot. Like, can I escape, you know, class, you know, wage slavery, basically, by simply, like, reinventing myself mm-hmm. and transforming myself into someone else? It's the place famous from the George Cukor musical in 1964 with Audrey Hepburn and Rex Harrison. Hmm. I fucking loved that musical when I was a kid. It has a problem, which is that movie is really in love with Rex Harrison's
right.
Henry Higgins. Like, he is a complete asshole and completely self-absorbed, arrogant, caustic, insensitive.
But the film does not frame him that way in any way.
Not really. Like, or it's very indulgent of it. Like, it shows him being those things, but it's more like,
it's so charming.
What a character.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And Audrey Hepburn, and I love Audrey Hepburn, but the way she plays Liza is very gentle, and even though she does eventually start calling Higgins on his bullshit, she does so in a very gentle, soft-spoken, Audrey Hepburn-ish way. Where right. she's not going to get in a screaming fight with right. him, generally. Right. She's just going to be like, you know, you make me feel bad, and I do not think this is a good thing to have in my life. And the problem is he talks over her in the film. And in the end, the film kind of, I think, talks over her a right. little bit. And it ends on this ambiguous note where she sort of comes back to him at the end, and he hasn't learned anything, but it's possible that she's come back, and they're going to continue their partnership in whatever form that takes. Problematic source material.
Sure.
Here's a revival in 2018. And how do you sort of adapt this and make it not absolutely poisonous to a modern audience, particularly, like, offensive to modern women watching this in the play? And I was really sort of apprehensive about this, because I wasn't sure how they were going to sort of thread this needle.
Mm-hmm.
But they mostly, like, fucking nail it. This rendition of Eliza Doolittle is much more the active agent of the story. Like, just in the way things are staged, she is the prime mover of the mm-hmm. story. She is the one who chooses to, like, launch this experiment. And the play is reacting to her.
Interesting.
Just in terms of staging, just in terms of, like, characters' reactions, like, she is at the center of things for the most part. The only time she's not at the center is when she's very pointedly being sort of cast aside or ignored by the men in the scene. The other decision they make is this Henry Higgins is much more of a man-child. And it's tough watching this, because this is a character I, like, really always enjoyed as a kid and didn't, like, I was, like, there's far more of Henry Higgins in me than I like to admit. Mm. And, like, the only reason I think I'm tolerable at all is that I know that I skew in that direction anyway, and I just have to keep watching for it. Watching this, I'm realizing, like, Henry Higgins is a character that, like, can go one of two ways if you watch this play. There's a point where you either have to, like, get over your bullshit and, like, accept that you're not special. You're not, you know, you are not some generational talent whose minor specialist abilities allow you to treat people that way,
mm-hmm.
or that character is going to go off in a complete, like, spiral of narcissism and, like, rejection. And it's kind of open at the end as to, you know, right. is this guy going to grow out of this? But Eliza outgrows him in this performance and in the stage.
Interesting.
And, yeah, so the final scenes are, like, really fraught, because in their final confrontations, like, this Eliza kind of breaks him down.
Mm-hmm.
And then that reconciliation at the end is really ambiguous and freighted. It ends up being a really interesting, like, reinterpretation of a play. Like, I think most of the audience is probably going to know by heart.
Right.
But completely, like, changes the meaning and critiques the meaning of the play.
Awesome.
How
long is it running? And do you know if it's going to go on tour after this, or is it already on tour?
I don't know. This opened in April. I'm not sure there's going to be a touring show. But I think it's running through, like, September at least. Like, one of the reasons I made a point to go to this, because I don't know how long it's going to run, but I was definitely pretty eager to do that. Real quick, I wanted to shout out, so the guy playing Henry Higgins is Harry Haddon Patton, who a lot of people are going to know from Downton Abbey.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
And I did not see the performance by Lauren Ambrose, who's normally Eliza Doolittle.
Yeah.
But I got the Sunday matinee because that was the only time I knew I'd be there. So I saw Kirsten Anderson's performance, which was still very, very good. Was possibly, as I understand it, Ambrose's performance of Eliza is much more its own thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And Anderson's performance seemed to owe a little bit more to the Audrey Hepburn performance. Yeah.
I'm seeing it through February, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah.
Looks
like it's going to be there.
Plenty of time.
Go see it. It's not a huge venue, so like all the seats like are amazing. Good. And
awesome.
Fuck, the Henry Higgins like mansion, his townhouse set, was just astonishing. The way they've got a rotating stage, there are a few pieces of staging and choreography that are like absolutely breathtaking in this play. So it's awesome. It's live theater, it's best. Fucking right. Go. Amazing.
Live theater is great.
Awesome.
Natalie.
Oh.
You still? We had 30 minutes.
50 minutes.
I know, I'm sorry. I don't know if I have one this week.
It's fine.
Okay. You had a Hollow Knight transcendent experience.
That I sounds... did.
You listening to anything? You watching anything?
Tell us about that Green Day shirt.
It's a really good Green Day shirt.
It's from the Dookie
album.
Yeah. I didn't see the full, but I know that one by heart.
Yeah. I randomly made a Green Day reference the other day. I don't remember what it was now, but it was just one of those things that was like someone started a sentence and I finished it with a Green Day lyric from Dookie, and I don't remember what it was now, but it was like, oh wow, that's just in my brain. I can't escape it. All right, if you don't have anything,
I'll give
mine, and maybe you'll.
All I've
have
been
time.
Listening to is like the is my boyfriend's rehearsals for his show on Tuesday.
And you can endorse that?
No endorsement here, apparently.
Wow. Well, I don't know. I don't want to start.
Damn.
My boyfriend's playing a show on Tuesday night in New York City at Baby's All Right, 8 p.m.
There you go.
Okay.
Have you seen It Follows?
Yeah.
You know Jake Weary, the first guy that gives it to the girl?
Yes.
Okay. He's a musician.
Rob is dying currently.
New York Rob, are you okay?
He's a musician. Why are you laughing?
Just your précis of It Follows.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's what happened.
It's not good, yeah.
It is the truth.
He's a musician. He's collaborated a lot with Ground is Lava, mm-hmm. who Ben has collaborated a lot with. And Jake asked Ben and Jasper, Jasper's Ground is Lava, to open for him at Baby's All Right on Tuesday night. So 8 p.m.
Show up.
At Baby's All Right.
There you go.
Show up. Okay.
Be there. Buy tickets.
But don't be fucking weird.
Don't be weird.
Yeah, don't be weird, don't please. Be weird.
Also, no one would even, like, people would just be confused if you were weird.
Be nice.
Be nice. Be good and be good at it.
Be good and be. Are we done? Is that it?
Bye. Because you still have your waypoint.
Okay. Evo. I spent the weekend watching Evo.
Saw some tweets, Austin.
Saw more than a few tweets. Yeah, a lot of tweets. I watched Evo this weekend. I did my best to watch as much as I could from different games. Obviously, I was a big Dragon Ball FighterZ stan all weekend, which had just some incredible competition. But everything I watched was great. So like broadly, I advise you. Figure out which of the Evo games is the one that you're excited about or that you can imagine yourself being excited about. You know, there was a billion things there. Everything from, like, two different Smash games.
Mm-hmm.
The Tekken was incredible. Tekken 7 was really great. Street Fighter 5 is a much more interesting game for me to watch than to play.
Sure.
People are really good at that game. And the mind games are so fun to watch. But for me, obviously, unsurprisingly, I've been ringing the Dragon Ball FighterZ bell for the entire year. I knew when that game came out that I thought it was something special because it's made by Arxis, who makes the Guilty Gear and BlazBlue games, and those have been gorgeous forever and really complicated forever. But Dragon Ball FighterZ had immediately seemed like, and the designer came out and she was very clear that she wanted to make a game that was more accessible. It is still a very complex game, I still advise people to pick it up and play it just because I think it's really fun, but like I'm never going to be really good at that game because I'm not going to put a dozen hours a week, you know, let alone what you really need to put into it, which is like 4 or 5 hours a day to get
from
good.
Eric Van Allen's really good preview piece that he wrote for Evo, like it's got that Marvel versus Capcom, like in addition to learning to fight with the characters, you need to learn about the combos and assists that they,
that they can do, right?
Screen.
So like the very basic rundown of what Dragon Ball FighterZ is, it kills me that the Z
every
is just
time,
on there. The way that it works is like it is like something like Marvel versus Capcom. You pick three characters and you play as one character at a time. You can tag in a new character to bring in a new character. That's a very risky thing to do, to just do it whenever, because they're just like flying on screen and they will tend to get knocked the fuck out of the air when they do that.
Yeah.
Unless you're really good. One of my favorite things I've been watching this game over the course of the last 5 or 6 months now, since February, 6 months, I guess. Because when I first started watching people play this game competitively, no one did any tags. It's a game where on first blush, there's not a lot of safe time. There's not a lot of like, this is a safe moment where I can tag out and bring someone new in. It's very hard comparatively to get what you would call a hard knockdown, where you actually hit a character and they fall to the ground and they're out for a second. Players have gotten way better at finding those gaps where they can bring in a character to actually be part of a combo or to just get in safely. And they've also found ways to work around the fact that there aren't that many hard knockdowns. And seeing the play change over the last 6 months to where it is now has been so fantastic. So to see that on display alone was really cool. But what made it really special is all year I've been watching this one rivalry between Sonic Fox, who is a fighter who we profiled, or a player we profiled last year as part of the Waypoint Presents. Yeah, exactly. He is he's always been a fantastic player of the NetherRealm games, Mortal Kombat and Injustice. He'd been one of the best Mortal Kombat and Injustice players for years. He did not, in fact, win the Injustice Evo last year. He got knocked out. He again got knocked out of Injustice this year. But I would suspect that's because he spent so much time becoming probably one of the most dominant players in Dragon Ball. And the other player is Goichi, who is Go-1, a fantastic Japanese player. And everything from their fighting styles to their mannerisms make them such compelling rivals on stage and online. At the beginning of the year, if you don't know Sonic Fox at all, he is black, he is openly gay, he is a furry, he wears his fursuit on stage. He celebrates with, in the full fursuit. He's, like, such an exciting figure.
Well, that's kind of the new thing, too, right? Because he used to wear the fox
ears. He used to wear the fox ears,
the hat.
That's
what was recognizable.
Yes,
exactly.
The hands,
when did the
fursuit
come out?
Last year he got the fursuit, which is exciting because, like, it's obviously he's so himself in it, and he obviously doesn't play with the paws on. He plays with the paws off because that would be very hard to do.
That would be
rough. So, honestly, he's so fucking good that might one day, who could say.
Maybe he'll be better with them.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And so now he plays with, like, the bodysuit on and the arms and stuff on. And he's just, like, such a charismatic and, like, loud and great at shit-talking and great at, like, but also just puts in the work himself. Like, he isn't just an empty shit-talker. So early in the year, and it comes from experience, right? It comes from speaking from, I know this game well enough to say that Vegeta is trash. So at the beginning of the year, he said that Vegeta, who's a major character in the Dragon Ball franchise, was trash as a character that you pick. At the time, that made waves because everybody picked Vegeta, because in this game, you're not just picking characters to play as, you're also picking characters to, as Rob suggested, be your assists. And an assist in this game is, while you're brawling it out one-on-one, you can also not only tag in other characters, but be like, hey, Vegeta, help me out real quick. And Vegeta's thing is like, he'll fly by and do a bunch of like energy blasts, basically, that can help you get distance and spacing. So like, think about something like Bloodborne. What if in the middle of fighting a boss, you could be like, hey, Vegeta. And Vegeta showed up and shot a bunch of fucking energy blasts that pushed your foe away from you and gave you some space. Or that while that character was blocking Vegeta's attacks from up high,
you could come
in from the low or from the side or whatever and get some hits
in. That would be extremely chill.
Be extremely chill and useful. In fact, we do it anyway when you summon a character, right? Like, that is kind of what a summoned character can do for you in a game like Bloodborne, is distract an enemy for a second or mix them up.
Totally.
So Vegeta, at the time, is Goichi's anchor. It's like, when you pick your characters out, you pick three characters. And it tends to be that the third character you pick, and, I'm sure I'm getting some of this wrong, I don't follow fighting games as much as I wish I could, but that third character is like, hey, If it all comes down to something, it's all going to come down to this. This is the person who I know them in and out. I can win against incredible odds with this character, even against, you know, two or three other enemies. I can hold it together. And so Goichi's anchor was Vegeta, and Sonic Fox came out and was like, no, Vegeta's trash. Vegeta's a garbage tier character. No one should play as Vegeta.
More like Velveeta.
More like Velveeta, exactly. Cheese, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's like a yipes level comment. And so they immediately had beef. And it's like, these are the two obvious chief competitors in this scene. And they never had fought for months, you know, for a month or two of just trash talking back and forth. And they, you know, Sonic Fox won one of the first huge tournaments here. It ended by saying, Omae wa Shinderu, which is the line from Fist of the North Star, which is, you are already dead. And they fought finally back in March, I want to say, March or April. And Sonic Fox got washed, just like completely destroyed. And so went back in the training, you know, went back into the hyperbolic time chamber, found a new team, came back out, beat Goichi. And they went back and forth like this a few times. And all the while, other players started showing up. This is the Eric Van Allen article is a fantastic read. It's on the site, waypoint.fights.com, that gives you the kind of history of this. So we get to Evo finally, and of course, round by round, you know, it looks like Sonic Fox and Goichi are going to end up facing off. And they end up facing off in top eight. And the way that fighting games tournaments work at Evo, and in a lot of places, is that it's double elimination. Once you get to a certain stage, I mean, pretty early on, it gets to a point where if you lose twice inside of a given like stage of the competition, you get knocked out. So the top eight is two people or four people in the winner's brackets, or two matches in the winner's side, and then two matches in the loser's side. If you're in the winner's side, you got to get beat twice to be knocked out of the competition. If you're in the loser's side, you just have to get beat once. Sonic Fox and Goichi are both in the winner's side. They beat their respective opponents, and they go on to face each other, and Sonic Fox crushes him. It's just like, you don't ever see Sonic Fox play as strongly as you do here, and he's already a very strong competitor, and he is just on his fucking shit. He's just completely on his game and just completely washes him and knocks Goichi into losers. Goichi is a very defensive player, and he's so fun to watch because he is just a powerhouse of just like being able to block anything you throw at him and being able to dig deeper. And so in that first matchup, the most incredible thing happens, which is that he summons the dragon. He gets all the dragon. So I don't want to get too deep into the mechanics here, but there is a way to summon a dragon, which is a Dragon Ball thing. If you get all the Dragon Balls, you can summon the dragon and ask it for a wish. And the wishes in this game are like, bring back one of my teammates, heal my health up all the way, give me a special resource I can use to heal myself.
Can
and
you
also
pick,
do extra
or is it
power.
Random?
You pick.
How routinely do you see the dragon?
Super rare. Like, okay. It's super rare. I didn't see it at all otherwise this weekend, except from Goichi, like, at all. To do it, you have to get, combined, the players have to have hit seven different combo lengths, a 10-hit plus combo, a 20-hit plus combo, a 30-hit plus combo, up to a 70-hit plus
so
combo.
So when the dragon shows up, it's already a legendary match.
So it's already, so you don't even, at that point, you still haven't had enough to get it. Getting all of those doesn't summon it. That gives you all the balls. To summon it, you have to then have seven bars of super charged up, which is a lot because it means you haven't been spending it to do super moves or to teleport away from attacks, and then you have to land a combo. And so there's this feeling of, it feels so much like a really great moment in soccer where you can feel the build coming. It's like, oh, wait, the pieces are in place. Wait a second. The cross could come over, and then he could head it in, and, like, that's the feeling. It's like, wait a second, I can feel the play developing. And so everybody sees Goichi's getting to where he can summon the dragon, and he fucking does it, and he gives Vegeta all of his health back. And it's like, oh, my God. And then Sonic Fox crushes him and knocks him into losers. And it's just this thing of just, like, you know, the tweet starts going around, which is, in Dragon Ball, you can summon the dragon and wish for something, and sometimes the dragon's like, it's not in my power to do that. And so the tweet went around that was like, Goichi to the dragon, give me the power to defeat Sonic Fox. Shenron the dragon, it's not in my power. And so Goichi gets knocked to losers, and there's a bunch of incredible competitors and losers, and he's working his way through them, and gets pushed hard, but pushes through. Like, continually, his defense is just impeccable. He does incredible. Like, this game looks so good when defense is strong, because you'll just be backed into a corner, and, like, high block, low block, just blocking everything, reflecting things back. the game is so pretty. If someone shoots like a blast of energy at you and you do the reflect like parry, it gets knocked into the background and damages the background. So that's suddenly cool. This like fighting arena gets like holes in it and the thatched roof has been shot through with a huge energy blast. And Goichi, of course, fights his way through the loser's bracket and back into finals with Sonic Fox. And he's pissed. Like, you can just, he has, like, a face of just pure anger on him. His focus is all the way in. And he has to, remember, to get knocked out, he has to lose twice. He's already lost once. For Sonic Fox to lose, he has to lose twice. He hasn't lost at all. And in the first showdown, Goichi crushes him. 3-0. Just completely dominates him. Completely is just, like, has Sonic Fox on tilt. Has him just, like, shook a little bit. And is just like laser focused in, just has him completely beat. His defense is impenetrable. Sonic Fox is playing really, really rushed, really just trying. If Sonic Fox can open him up, he can do damage, but he can't open him up. He cannot find the you know, kind of weak spot in the armor. He just like can't get in. And so Sonic Fox does what all champions do, and he freezes him out. He calls in this obscure rule that no one has used for years that says that you can get a coin flip to change seats. He wants to be on player one side, not on player two side. And so play stops for like 6 minutes. And so
in the middle of the match?
No, the matches are over. He's getting ready to go into the second set of matches.
Okay, got you.
He's like, no, I want to switch seats. And all the refs come out like, it's like, this rule hasn't been used since 2011. But the rule is still in play. And so there's some debate as to whether or not he's just a better player from the player one seat. Or if he's trying to freeze out the high momentum of Goichi, or if he himself just needs a moment to breathe and collect himself. But he uses this obscure rule, which I've heard
He had that in his back pocket.
And so slows down play.
Sorry, you were about to say you've heard from
sources through the grapevine that is like someone must have told him that because he wasn't in the scene the last time it was used. Like, he could have never seen it used. Mm-hmm. So someone must have given, someone who's been around the scene some corner man was like, yo. Plan B, call for the switch. And so they flip the coin, and it comes up heads or whatever, and they switch seats. And then it's just, like, over. Sonic Fox just immediately dominates him. Just, like, completely 3-0 again the other direction. I believe it was 3-0 in the finals. Just finds the openings and just nails them each time. And in the middle of that last run, Goichi fucking summons the dragon again. He gets it again, and it's not enough. And it almost looks like it might be for a second, and Sonic Fox closes it up, and it's just like, you know, it's wild to see 250,000 people cheering for, maybe not all cheering for, obviously, but watching a black gay furry win in an emerging fighting game who is like so, it's like such a powerful moment, and it's such a dramatic moment that has so many like nuances, and it's one of those great things of like, whoever would have won there, I would have been happy because the competition was so fierce and so fun to watch. Go watch some of those matches. Also, there was a tweet that I retweeted from AVB, who is a great games critic and game creator, who, if I had a second waypoint, it would be Heaven Will Be Mine, which is a fantastic
queer mech visual novel that just came out,
which I guess, disclosure, I'm friends with AV and with Mia, who made that game. But she tweeted a link to a video of a really great Goichi match, Goichi versus Leffen, who Leffen won Smash Melee this year, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
and Leffen's also an incredible Dragon Ball player. So go watch the Goichi versus Leffen match. If you just search that on Google, you'll find their match is like the perfect thing to watch to get into Dragon Ball FighterZ. And then go watch some Evo. It was such an amazing culmination. Like, sometimes those things happen and it's like you get to the Evo championship and two fighters you haven't really followed make it to the finals, because that's how it works. It's a tournament. Sometimes someone else is just on their fucking game, or someone who isn't part of the scene shows up. Like, that's what happened with Street Fighter. A fighter who, I don't pay close attention to Street Fighter, but the player who won was a UK player who I just had never even heard of before, because I don't follow that scene too tightly. Wasn't one of the key players who I thought might show up. Did end up beating Shikido, who won last year, who beat Punk last year. But it was like really cool to see that happen, but not as cool as this was, because it felt like the perfect dramatic, it had to be this way, destined fight between these two greats. And I love that there's an asterisk on it. I love that people can get fucking salty over the coin flip, over the seat switch. I love that, like, the meme now is that I saw another image going around on Twitter that was, like, the tier list for players in Dragon Ball FighterZ was, you know, all the other competitors were B tier, or was C tier. B tier was Sonic Fox facing left. A tier is Goichi, and S tier is Sonic Fox from the other direction. That's it. Can't beat him from that side.
Very good.
So
that's really
that
good.
Is my waypoint for the week, for sure. All right. I think that's going to do it for us today.
Thanks for story time.
Thank you.
That
sorry
was riveting.
To dig in on that one. I was going to do that first, but I was like, I can't do that first. I have to save that for the end. That's my waypoint.
I need to go watch this.
It's
sounds
so fucking
good.
It's so good. The fucking death glares. The death glares from Goichi are just so real, and so I get it. I get it. I get it. Even as a Sonic Fox fan, I fucking get it. Like, that's the reason I don't root for the Patriots, you know? So.
Oh, the death glares during the coin flip.
Oh,
like,
of course.
Like, just, like...
Like, he had him.
He knows he has him.
He has him. He has him beat. And every second, you can just feel him cooling off. It's so good. It's such a good dramatic exchange. You gotta win it to win it, you know? Sometimes you gotta take the L. As always, thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. If you have questions or complaints about Sonic Fox and the coin flip, send them to gaming@vice.com. Natalie Watson, where can people find you on the internet?
At Natalie Watson on Twitter.
Rob Zachney.
At Rob Zachney.
Danielle.
At Danielle Arai.
There it is. You follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Follow Waypoint at twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/WaypointVice, youtube.com/WaypointVice, and twitch.tv/Waypoint, where in just a little bit, we're going to be streaming a ton of Stellaris. So look forward to the archives of that later this week.
Yeah.
By the time you listen to this, that'll have already happened. So.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for us. Danielle, what do we say?
Be good at it.
Peace.
The city never sleeps, my friends.
All right.